Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
I just got out of the greatest homeless task force meeting, okay? And we're all talking about the plaza and how we might move them. Well, here it is. We're not asking to be criminalized for being homeless. We're just asking for some work and some rehab and some maybe a needle exchange program to get rid of the problems that are down here. It's bad. It is. You know?
It is.
But we don't want to be criminalized. There's no sense of being criminalized because you're poor and you're out of work and you're struggling. There really isn't. I don't understand that one.
Guillermo Mash here wishing you a happy holidays, and also a big shout out to Richard Munzer for his impromptu interview outside the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force. Next up, beginning of the show, is a reading of a letter that was signed and sent to Mayor Morgan, CC, to all of the council members, and it regards a very tragic event, one that I'd covered at quite a bit of detail on KZFR and my social media pages, of his son who was killed in an officer-involved shooting this summer in Chico, California. Dear Chairman Mayor Morgan, Michael M. Ramsey, District Attorney for your county, on 9/28/2017, sent a report to Chico Police Department Chief Michael O'Brien regarding the officer-involved shooting death of Tyler Scott Rushing, my son, by the Chico Police Department Sergeant Scott Ruppel, the second shooter, and an unnamed private security guard. Mr. Ramsey used a lot of adjectives such as violent, unprovoked, sneak attack, bizarre behavior, violent, assaultive actions to describe Tyler's actions when he encountered the private security guard, identified later as Sergeant Edgar Sanchez, an employee of the Armed Guard Private Protection Company known as AGPP. I was surprised that the DA would so strongly defend Sanchez and find no criminal liability in his official report of the actions of the private employed security guard who was the first shooter. Sergeant Sanchez is also a member of the group Volunteers in Policing, VIP, and was known by the officers and staff of the Chico Police Department, and this was not disclosed by Mr. Ramsey or Chief O'Brien. Both men are sworn to tell the truth. Attached is an article from the Chico News and Review dated 11/30/2017. The writer, Ken Smith, discovered a financial contract existed between the city of Chico and AGPP. Was Sanchez working along with Ruppel under the contract? The financial relationship between the city of Chico and AGPP was not disclosed by Mr. Ramsey's report, suggesting to me the DA was in fact defending the two shooters as if they were both city employees. I believe the Ramsey report is simply wrong and misleading due to these omissions. Chief O'Brien allowed these factual admissions. Attached is a recent Dun & Bradstreet Comprehensive Insight Report on AG Private Protection Incorporated, and a quick review of the highlighted areas shows the company has a negative net worth. How can the city of Chico hire a vendor with a negative net worth? And further, this contract was undisclosed to you and other council members. My hope is you terminate Chief O'Brien for factual omissions and hidden agreements with unqualified vendors. This turned out to be a life or death matter. Sincerely, Scott Rushing, Ventura, California.
All right, Guillermo Mash here for KZFR Without a Roof radio program. For December 20th, we're gathered around a box and a stool here on a Tascam field recorder here at KZFR. with one of my favorite people, Bob Trouse. Welcome back to KZFR, Bob Trouse.
Thank you, thank you. I'm glad to be here, as you know.
Bob had a wonderful, Bob's team, Chico Housing Action Team here in Chico, they had a wonderful front page cover of their Simplicity Village, and you're on the front page of the Enterprise Record. So maybe just a little ditty on how excited you are to get the media press before we delve into some of the meat of the questions, Bob.
Well, you know, it's so important for us because we have to change hearts and minds. You know, there's a on the street, there's a feeling about homelessness that we need to change, that these people are there because they want to be there, because they're evil, they're bad. And we have to change that perspective. And this article in the ER and the one that was in the News and Review actually helps people understand some of the conditions that end up people being on the street. And so there's the people on the street, there's so many different reasons that they're on the street. And we know many of those reasons, we hear them, and we've learned that we can't judge that because, you know, it could be us on the street. And I think as we see things happen in our society, and I was at a seminar in Sacramento not long ago that dealt with homelessness from the state issue. And we had 24 panelists there talking about the issue of homelessness and lack of housing in our communities. And one of the things I realized there is that there was not a real understanding. When you're dealing with people who are upper middle class and upper class, trying to deal with the problems of people on the bottom, the middle class and the lower middle class, they don't really understand the situation that puts people into being unhoused. And so we have to work on that, and I think these articles help that. It helps, just like this radio station has helped us so much in having people's voices from the unhoused community go out and people hear it. I get feedback from that. Wow, I never thought about that. Wow, that story was so emotional. We had one a few weeks ago on here where people were literally crying when they hear about a young man who's grandfather died and his father spiraled out of control for a while and lost it. He's on the streets, ashamed, trying to get back into school. So those are the important stories that people can hear that change their mind about what we should be doing for the homeless. Should we be chasing them out of town? That's unrealistic. We know that. We've proven that with all the draconian laws that have been passed. What we need to do is house people. We know that we have a very, very low vacancy rate in this community. There's almost no housing or apartments available. So what is our job to do in this community? Our job is to build affordable housing, whatever that means in our own community. And when I say affordable housing, I'm talking about housing that people will make $900 or $1,000 a month because there's so many of them out there. They can afford to live safely in a home or an apartment that they can afford. And that's what our job is to do, is to re-educate this community and start looking at building homes and apartments that people can truly afford.
Thank you for that introduction, Bob. And what we're going to do here today, I don't think myth is strong enough a word. We're here to BS. We're here to BS bust. And the second word rhymes with it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of history we have now. I remember when we started Safe Space, I was there the first night over at the Peace and Justice Center. And I remember the past director of the Tory shelter telling us, you know, all the reasons it wouldn't work. And you were going to have cops and you're going to have to frisk people down. And they were going to be running around causing problems. And then you did a training the next year with the police. They were talking about transporting people. I'll never forget this, Bob. Homeless people, they're just going to be puking in the back of your car. And it was just terrible. All of these, I'm calling them lies. They're just taking one, you know, anecdotal thing and expecting everyone's going to behave the same way. So what I got really excited about, Bob, in this ER article is knowing the success you've had with, let's just start with your Housing First, formerly called Master Lease, because you've got 12 homes right now.
Right. And
tell us how that's been going as far as, you know, quote unquote, police calls or, you know, all of these crazy rumors.
We don't have police calls. Mm-hmm. We don't have hardly any visits to hospitals mm-hmm. other than regular emergency situations that any person might have. We don't have the drug and alcohol problems. We don't, because we've housed people. We've given them opportunity. One of the things that we're doing also, many times when people face the stuff that they have that has put them unhoused out in the community, they lose trust in society.
Yeah.
And our job, I feel, our most important job before a person can start moving forward and moving back up and moving back into society is to develop that trust. And that's what we do. We surround people with trust until they actually understand that they can trust us. And at that point, we see tremendous movement. We have houses that were started wet and are now dry because we want to dry. We're ready to move up. Any demand, everybody in that house becomes dry. So we've had tremendous success in our community of people that are now housed with us. Again, as you suggested, we just opened up our 12th home. We're going to be opening up more because we now have a relationship with the Torah Shelter. Instead of the Torah Shelter telling us it's not going to work, the Torah Shelter now has a relationship with us, a really wonderful working relationship. And we're going to be looking at more homes that we're going to be opening up and finding people in the street that are ready to make that transition, to be ready to find faith and trust again in themselves and the community.
What I see you guys doing is you treat people like human beings, and Safe Spaces run the same way. You know, and I've talked with Lisa Curry and others about this, and the way Safe Spaces run, you just treat the people as human beings, and you give them some choices, and they almost always make the right choice. And what I see happen a lot is people pigeonhole these people, and they might raise their voice once, and they're screaming at them, saying, hey, you do that once again, you're out the door. You do it twice, we're calling the cops. And they're puffing themselves up like, I'm better than you, and I'm going to knock your butt down. What would you say to that? Because I think that's the biggest thing.
It is the biggest thing.
It's the absolute biggest thing.
Again, that's a misunderstanding. Again, when people are on the street, they're afraid, they're scared, they're tired, they're many times sick. What we need to do, again, with the police department and the community and the people who work with us, is something we call crisis intervention training. Understanding the triggers, seeing those triggers, being able to de-escalate a situation. Because when you're scared and you're tired and you're hungry and cold, you're frustrated, you are angry. You do sometimes strike out. And our job is...
mostly verbally.
Verbally, of course. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. We have people who strike out verbally, and it's how you deal with that person. Again, as you suggested, if you treat them humanly, and understanding that...
Give them space.
Exactly. Understanding the spatial needs. Exactly where I was going. Understanding the spatial needs of people. And CIT training gives that to us. You can de-escalate, and what you end up with is a friend. Someone who... And next morning when we're cleaning up at Safe Space, is there mopping, cleaning, working? And we have that all the time. We have fundraisers. We have to raise money all the time. We have people from that community that come and work at our fundraisers because they appreciate what they have and what we're trying to give them.
One thing I'll interject, because I was over this year without a roof, we're going to be there every Monday. Last year we did what I call hodgepodge, but we're going to be doing journalism and volunteering over there. So I was over there at the winter shelter. But this is the perfect story to cement what Bob Trouse, folks, is joining. We have Bob Trouse, one of the founders of Chico Housing Action Team and a board member. But Eric comes in, and everyone knows Eric. Plays a guitar, they're kind of on and off relationship, 29-year relationship with Gail. But I sit down next to him, and he's all upset. And I sit down, and he's just angry, right? And I'm sitting in a chair with a little bit of space, and he said, once again, the it word. He said, I'm the it, and you, it's just like, you know, and I gave him a little bit of space. I got up, and I just kind of left, you know, and he was still yelling. He was literally yelling at me. The beautiful part of the story, Bob, is I'd already gone down and sat with Bill, and everyone knows Bill. He helps you guys out at the shelter. Right. But I'm watching, and he goes over, and Bill kind of leans in and says something to him. Eric starts laughing. So Eric walks by, and I said, Bill, what did you say to him? What did you say to him to kind of help him, you know, get him back on track? Which is one thing that people don't understand is the houseless community is doing that all the time. They're almost like mental health professionals. It's amazing. But the best part of the story is I'm sitting at the table. I did some photography of Vicky. I love Vicky, the lady in the wheelchair. But Eric starts going, hey, man, I really apologize. And I stop what I'm doing. I'm like doing stuff. And I stop. He says, so what's up? He says, yeah, man, I really didn't mean it, you know. But he made that connection, you know, and he continued to talk to me. He had a big smile on his face. But how would that have gone if I wanted to play I'm more macho than you? You know, it would have played what happens across this town. You know, we waved a gun in his face and he didn't stop talking. So we whipped him with it. You know, it's stupid.
And that, again, goes back to the way the police treat people and how important training is for the police department. Understand that how they approach someone is totally dependent upon how that situation will play out, whether someone ends up getting arrested or someone goes away with a smile on their face. It's so important. Sometimes what I'll do, actually, if somebody I see is upset, I'll go away, I'll walk away, and I'll go get him a glass of something to drink. I'll bring some here. And you change everything. You change everything because you're showing them respect. Mm-hmm. And you're understanding that they have a right sometimes to be angry, to be upset, because their world is hard. It's so hard. I mean, I don't think people who have never been unhoused can understand what it's like to try and sleep under a bridge. five times a night be aroused by the police to get out of where you're sleeping, be cold, be wet, be sick. There's no way to understand it. And as you suggested, and it's so true, we find it so true, the people on the street know each other better than anybody. They can de-escalate. They've learned how to de-escalate in their life. They've learned how to take care of each other. If I want to know where somebody is that I'm worried about, I go ask somebody on the street. And they trust me, and they'll tell me, oh, so-and-so is over here. That's where they're going to be tonight, if you want to find out where they are. Mm-hmm. They know each other. They care about each other because it's a community.
Yeah.
It's an unhoused community, but they do want to be housed. Yeah. They want to change.
See, that's what I find the most fascinating as far as a petri dish with Safe Space is that Lauren Kennedy, I'm going to be seeing her a lot because she's a Monday ops manager, but I was just kind of getting my equipment set up and she was doing such a great job explaining to people that had never, quote unquote, been in Safe Space and worked with people experiencing homelessness. But she was talking about a lot of the same things and explaining, you know, sometimes, you know, that people will be like aggressive and they're almost like testing it out. They want to see if you're, you know, you're willing to accept them who they are and just kind of, you know, let that go. And just, she was doing such a wonderful, wonderful job. I think the point I'm trying to make is, you know, folks that never worked with the houseless community, and the only thing that you know about the houseless community is listening to Sean Morgan and Sorensen belabor these people, or the cops telling you how many criminals we got in town, you would be stunned. Actually, you'd probably start to get mad like me. I'm mad at the city council, and I'm mad at the cops for trying to paint these people for who they're not. And I coined this phrase, and I said it to the person the first time I coined it. I spent a couple of days, some significant time in the plaza, and I'm Newman mad. I'm Newman mad. What were you out of that, Bob?
Well, I can understand that anger and that frustration because we all feel that way. We all feel like the homeless people in this community have been attacked for several years now. And the reality for me, if I look at it, I go back, like I said earlier, I was at a seminar about homelessness in Sacramento. And what I realized there is we're doing it totally wrong in our communities as to how we're dealing with the homeless situation. We understand, and I call it, I guess, unfortunately, the Walmart model. What has happened in our community and across our country? Part-time jobs, no security, no benefits, no vacation, nothing. We're going to have a tsunami of homeless. It's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Even Robert Marbit says we're going to have a tsunami of homeless.
Yes, right. He wants to deal with it is punishing them. He wants to punish them instead of helping them. And again, to me, the answer is, again, compassion, caring, and building homes that people can afford. If someone retires on Social Security at $1,000 a month, they have a right to be able to live and not be living on the street because we're not giving them those other benefits. Unless our society changes, and I haven't seen any indication of that with the things that we've seen happen. We need to build what we call affordable housing. And that is not 2,600 square foot, which is the average size of the new houses being built, 2,600 square foot homes. It's a home that's 200, 300, 400 square feet that someone can actually move into and afford to live and to own and feel safe in it. And that's what we have to look at this point in our own community. Where can we build homes, whatever they are, whatever size, where people can either rent, buy, whatever it is, and be safe. I've had people on the station, women, talking about what it's like to live on the streets. And we, you know what?
Terrific.
We have more and more and more women and children in the streets. I had two more calls for people that are homeless. One was a young pregnant woman. Another has a child that's about 7 years old. They don't know what to do. They were in a fire. They didn't have the money. They're low-income people. They're out in the street.
The mobile home?
What do they do?
The mobile home? Could it possibly be the one where the mobile home burned on MLK? Is that what you're talking about?
No, that's a different one.
It's a different one.
Same story, different situation.
Yeah.
These were up in the hills.
Yeah.
We have another situation where someone, the mobile home park they were living in actually got condemned. They end up on the street.
It's happened all around Chico.
They've condemned a
bunch of them. They've upscaled them.
Upscaled everything. So these people don't have an opportunity. They work. They're working class people. Mm-hmm. They have worked their whole lives, many of them. They deserve to be able to purchase or rent at a reasonable rate. We don't have that any longer.
Maybe at this point you're fired up like Bob and I and kind of, you know, wondering what you can do. So I'll make a pitch. You know, I've been reaching out through Butte Environmental Council and quote-unquote Chico Community Watch. And I actually got a little bit of angst towards the advocate community. And I'll explain it. Is, you know, everyone keeps talking about, you know, CCW is doing this and, you know, these creek cleanups are doing that. I think we have some responsibility to be alongside those folks and help lead by example and help train them by experience of what it is all about with the Houseless community. I did my first one with Block Party with Beck, and it went really, really well. For the sake of time, I won't give you the examples. Actually, I did a whole radio show, a good portion of my radio show around that last week. But I'm actually going to get involved with CCW from an advocacy journalist, and I'll help clean up. But being there with them and helping them to not only see by my example, but to allow me to, as a journalist, Bob, interview some of these folks and get their opinions on what's going on and maybe get them involved in the creek cleanups. Because I've always known, Bob, if you want that creek clean, give them a dumpster, give them some dignity, and give them a toilet. And
give them a home.
And give them a home. Yeah, well, thank you, Bob. I was setting that one up perfectly. But anyway, I think as advocates, we need to do more as far as helping to educate the community and being honest and upfront about it.
Right, and I totally agree. I have a different situation. It really bothers me. I don't like the holidays, and it's a major reason for me. One of them is I see all the churches and all of these people who gift people during the holidays for one night or feed them for one night. If they understand that there's a problem, because they're obviously responding to a major problem in our community, why is it only one night? We all feel good. One night of the year, we say, wow, we're going to cook some food for people tonight. Isn't that, aren't we cool? And no, it's not cool, because you're ignoring 364 other days a year when these people don't have anything and should have something in our community. Because if we're caring people in this country and we are a democracy and we care about the people, then we need to change the way we're doing things. And we haven't done that. At this point, I just, honestly, I almost hate it. I hate to use that word, but I almost hate to see one day, oh, this church is going to feed people tonight. What about the rest of the year? I see churches that are cost tens of millions of dollars to build. Why doesn't some of that money go to change their community, to make their community more caring and more stable? Because if you have people that are in homes and have stability, your community is more stable. It's more vibrant. And if we would do that and spend some of that money to make this community more stable and vibrant, we wouldn't see all of these people on the streets.
I have a good example. I always got these stories because I've known Bob since I've been here. I used to be out there homeless covering this beat. And I went to a church here in town on Christmas Eve with a backpack. Obvious homeless person. And, you know, I really felt like the African-American in the all-white crowd. But I'll never forget this, Bob. It cements what you said. This lady comes up to me, an older lady, and very direct. You know, not a lot of personal. It wasn't like, you know, like an old friend. It was very like businesslike. And she says to me, she says, I understand that you're sleeping in the Bidwell Park in a tent. I'd like to get you a hotel room tonight so you wake up on Christmas in a warm place. And I respectfully declined. And then she made the point, well, she said, don't you know it's illegal to be camping in the park? And that's when I started laughing. And I'll never forget the look on this person's face, this stern look. She says, I don't think this is funny. It's illegal to be camping up there in that park. So what is she more concerned about, Bob? Is she concerned about me or putting this front on, standing at the pews so everyone can see what kind of an elder that she is? Is she really concerned with me sleeping up in Bidwell Park, or is there some ulterior motive? I think it was the latter.
I think, obviously, she wasn't concerned about your well-being.
No. Right? There's nothing about her that said she was concerned about me.
And
zero.
I don't want to say that I don't appreciate that people feed people who need food. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we have to have a broader perspective. It isn't a one-day deal. If we want to change hearts and minds in this community, if we want to change what's happened in this community and get people housed, then it's a 365 a day year deal, and we have to look at it that way. We have to change the city council's perspective, or the city council, to understand that there are some options out there. There are some ways that we can help this community. CHAT is included. There's so many different organizations, the Torah Shelters Outreaching, the Jesus Center, the Esplanade House, all these organizations, CHAT. We're trying to change this community, but we need the community's help. We need the city council's help. We need the county supervisor's help to understand that what we're trying to do is make this community better and change the face of it, make it more human. And that can happen. We have the energy. We're here every day. We have the energy to do that. What we need is the good graces of the city fathers and mothers to say, yes, let's do it. And we'll open up our wallets to help you do that.
All right, Bob. Any closing comments?
I just really feel that We've moved a long ways from where we were 4 or 5 years ago when we started CHAT. From my perspective, as you mentioned, even the Torah Shelter and the Jesus Center recognizing we as a volunteer organization are quite nimble. We're a very nimble organization because we're volunteers. Many times organizations that come from a bureaucratic perspective, just because what happens in bureaucracy, they can't be as nimble as we are.
Yeah, they're afraid to do things.
Well, they are, but they also have rules and regulations that, you know, and I understand all of those things, the regulations that the feds come down all the way from the state, all the way to the county, all the way to the city. There's all these regulations, and I understand they have those. And our decision was, we don't really want to be able to do that. We need to be able to be nimble. When we talk about our Housing Now program, we don't call it Housing First. We call it Housing Now because we do it now, and it's different
The
way we do it. And trust that we're going to have more houses and more people. We just have, in the last 3 years, we've put 46 people out of homelessness. We've got them jobs. We were meeting last night. I got a call last night from somebody about another job for somebody. The people that start knowing us, knowing me, saying, hey, can you find someone for this job? We've got people. We just had somebody that is disabled. We've been taking them to see a psychiatrist. We've been taking them to see doctors. We find out that there's a brain disease, why this person's having problems. We're gonna be transporting to San Francisco to the hospital down there to try and get help to help this person. That's what we can do because we're volunteers and we're nimble.
Well, my closing comment is the biggest thing I block and tackle, because people tend to come up and talk to me, and the biggest question or pushback I get is, you know, CHAT's overextending themselves. You know, they've got 6 houses. They've got 7. And I always push back and go, I love it. I push back because I love it. Because one, there's a huge need, and a right delayed is a right denied. These people need housing now. We need to get a lot more kind of in the buck going, you know, we need to solve this now. But what I think is so beautiful about what you guys do, and you're not a faith-based organization, you're running on faith, man. You know the community is going to come around. You're going to get the people. And it's just a beautiful thing to see. It's a beautiful, and I love to do those blocking and tackle conversations, Bob.
It's so important. and I agree with you that we are developing faith within the homeless community. Yep. And I think we're developing faith within the greater Chico community, even the county. We're developing faith because the more people that see what's happening, and I take people to some of the houses, and some of the people in our houses are willing to actually talk and meet with people. And when they hear their stories, they have a realization. It's like an epiphany. Yeah. Wow, these people are real. And that's right. We have to make the homeless real and make them human again, because what we've done is an incredible job of dehumanizing them, right? We treat animals better than we do people on the street. Mm-hmm. So we have to rehumanize these people, and that's one of our jobs as CHAT.
You know what I'm going to forward promote this is that for the show tomorrow night here on KZFR, interviewing Bob Trouse. It's going to air tomorrow, 5 p.m., is Running on Faith, man.
That's right.
That's going to be the theme, and we're going to play. We're going to lead right now. Right now, right here, right now. Eric Clapton, Running on Faith. KZFR, 90.1 FM.
Big Pop Radio.
Can a poor boy do? But my world would be right. Love comes over me. Lately I've been talking in my sleep. Can't imagine what I'd have. Said my world would be right. Love comes back and waits. Thank you. world would be right. Love comes over me and you.
Thank you.